From WKAR at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports with Al Martin.
Johnny Peralta lines one to right field for a base hit.
Miguel Cabrera, game-winning walk-off home run.
The champagne is flowing in the Tigers clubhouse.
I would have never, ever thought that I would have been in the Michigan Hall of Fame as a kid when I first picked up a basketball on 512 Gray Street in Flint, Michigan.
Thomas drives from the left side, goes up and banks it in. Jasmine Thomas.
Just the joy you get from watching it, like a JV wrestler. Getting his first match ever. That makes it worthwhile as a coach.
It's a fake. Bates is going to throw. Goal. Touchdown! Michigan State wins it in overtime!
Hey, good people. It's Wednesday, July 3rd, 2013. That's right, the day before the holiday. July 4th is right around the corner. Are you ready? I know I can't wait. I can taste the barbecue in my mouth right now. Oh my goodness. We have another great show for you all today. We talk about the Tigers, who even things up with the Blue Jays yesterday. Hopefully this is a sign of turning things around for them. A certain Cincinnati Reds pitcher adds his name in the history books after one historic day on the mound. And we have some great news for any of you in the market looking to buy the mansion of the great Michael Jordan. Yeah, I'm sure that's like, maybe, like, all right, none of you. All right, and we chat with former Spartan baseball player who is looking to tear it up in the majors. Stick around. Current Sports starts right now. Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Shout out to my mom, who just called me right when we hit 1 o'clock. You probably heard my cell phone going off. Mom, I'm working, Mom. I'll call you after. Goodness. Special thanks, though, to everyone out there that calls or tweets us during the show, not on my cell phone, but the show, period. And we love the support from you all. We want to remind you all that you can be a part of the show every weekday from 1 to 2 p.m. on WKAR AM 870 by following me on Twitter at AlMartinWKAR, like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports, or even email me at AlMartin@WKAR.org. Don't be shy. Please don't be shy. Hit us up. We love to hear what's on your mind and discuss anything that's on your noggin. Of course, you know that you can give us a call right here, again, not on my cell phone, but at the station by calling 517-355-9527. Well, here we are, good people. Another beautiful day on the show on Current Sports with lots to discuss. To start this week, we had, just to go back in time for a bit, we had two fantastic guests talk about adaptive sports. Now, for those who don't know what adaptive sports are, they are sports in which disabled athletes compete against one another. Now, Jim Wozni, a man who actually lost his leg in 2000 during a motocross accident during practice, he has gone on to have great success at the Winter and Summer X Games, as well as the Extremity Games held right here in Michigan. And we also talk with Jerry Saracen. He was Tuesday's guest. Jerry was actually injured in 1990 riding his motorcycle, merging onto the freeway when he was clipped by a car, flipping him in the air. He was paralyzed from the waist down. But he has not let that incident knock him down in life. He is now the wheelchair basketball instructor right here at Michigan State University. So, two inspirational interviews, two inspirational people right there. And as you tuned in these past 2 days to hear their stories, I really hope that it inspired you in some way, shape, or form. As I just said, two truly inspirational guys that show you can do anything in life and that there are truly no limits. Now, we felt the need at Current Sports to highlight individuals like Jerry and Jim because people like them are what sports are all about. They are the true essence of sports. Sports unite, they serve as a getaway from life sometimes, and make us realize that the sky is truly the limit. Now, live life with no regrets, people. I always say that, one of the models I live by, because you never know what's going to be thrown your way. And on today's show, we invite someone who knows all too well about living life with no regrets, as he will be taking his baseball talents to the next level. He is a young man who recently received some pretty special news. He'll be heading to the MLB to play for the Chicago Cubs. That's right, David Garner. now former Michigan State pitcher, was selected by the Cubs in the seventh round of the 2013 Major League Baseball first-year player draft. He is the highest-drafted Spartan pitcher since Josh Axelson, who was selected in the fifth round by the St. Louis in 2000. Now, in three seasons, Garner is sixth all-time in Spartan history when it comes to strikeouts with 192. He also owns a career record 15-12 in 54 appearances. David, welcome to Current Sports.
How you doing?
Pretty good, man. All right, David. Now, let's go back. Talk about when you first received that call. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I hear you actually were returning from the zoo just to get your mind over the draft fiasco and then got the call from the Cubs.
Yeah, man. I like the zoo. I like the animals. It's I just went there. Me and my buddy just went there and just kind of looked around, really looked at the tigers was the big one, and the snakes. Well, right. I'm terrified of snakes, but I can look at them all day if they're behind the glass window.
Right, right. So so going to the zoo kind of took your mind off the draft. Just talk about how nerve-wracking the draft can be.
Man, it's just, if you sit there and you watch it and you just got your phone by your side waiting on the call, I mean, it could be the longest day of your life.
Gotcha. So so you heard the news, you went to the zoo, came back, and how did you hear the news?
I came back and I forgot, something was on. Mm-hmm. I was watching Indiana and Florida State at the regional or super regional. Mm-hmm. And my phone rang and my advisor just was like, "Welcome to Chicago." And I just kind of went in the room. My mom was in the living room folding clothes, and I went there and I said, "Mom, I'm a Chicago Cub." And she just kind of like screamed, and I just laid back and said, "Thank you, Jesus." And it was over.
Wow. Unbelievable moment, something you'll never forget for the rest of your life. Now, going back in time, David, you were actually drafted coming right out of high school in the 33rd round by the Cincinnati Reds. Why did you come to MSU instead?
I feel like that I didn't feel I was ready. I was only 17. I didn't feel I was ready enough to be that far away from somebody, from unfamiliar faces. So I felt that going to college would be the better choice. You know, I thought it would be a lot harder to try to go, and then if something happened and I try to come back to school, it would be hard to find the motivation. And my mom wasn't really all for going right out of high school. She wanted me to get at least some school out of the way. Mm-hmm. So I knew that Michigan State was, they always been good in athletics, and I knew that having them on a resume, try to get a job later on in life if I had to, wouldn't be a bad choice either.
Gotcha. Now, you came to MSU. You finished your career at Michigan State. In three seasons, you are sixth all-time in Spartan history when it comes to strikeouts with 192. When you look at your entire Spartan career as pitcher at MSU, what is the most gratifying part?
It got to be when we won the Big Ten championship. Dogpiling on our home field in front of all our fans, that was something I'll never forget.
How influential was Coach Boss, Jake Boss, during your time at MSU?
He was big. Him and Coach Vandermeer was real big. You know, they taught me not only how to pitch, but how to be a good individual, how to go about things, and how to prioritize things in my life, and just helped me mature and grow older as a kid.
Ladies and gents, we're talking with David Garner. David will be heading to the MLB, playing for the Chicago Cubs. He's a former Spartan, just received the news. Now, David, let's go back in time for a moment. How did you first start playing baseball?
I first started playing baseball just probably in my basement, just getting the cheapest, littlest batting balls that don't hurt, that you get hit by them or won't break a window or something.
Right.
And just in the basement, just swinging, and then as I got older, we went out to the park and start playing sandlot ball with tennis balls. And then I signed up for my little league team. It's called FOP. Mm-hmm. And I just started with pitching machine and then went up to the pitching. And then I got a call from a guy named Mark Nate. He's probably one of my best coaches growing up. And he asked me if I wanted to be a part of his travel team. And I was a catcher then.
Oh, wow.
And then he asked me if I wanted to try pitching, and I tried it and kind of just threw hard, so I wasn't really accurate or anything. I think my first time pitching, I had like 16 strikeouts with 13 walks.
Oh, man.
And, so I wasn't the accuratest.
Right.
And then when I got to high school, I started pitching for real probably about my sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got to college, I actually learned how to pitch instead of just throwing hard.
Now, David, I asked that question because now you are an African-American, and during the first week of this month, actually, or of current sports, we focused on the lack of African-Americans currently playing in the major leagues. Now, right now, I'm sure you know this, the percentage is at a dismal 8%. Why do you think this decline is so steady year after year when it comes to African-Americans and their presence in the MLB?
I don't know. I think that the African Americans are more talented at baseball than they think they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that just a lot of African Americans just choose to play basketball or football. You know, I feel that a lot of them play football because maybe the way they grow up or maybe the way they raise, they have some anger. And I mean, there's no better place to take it out legally than on a football field.
Right. Very true. Now, a lot of your buddies and people in your family, do they play baseball at all? Did they play that growing up?
They played it, like, in the backyard. But, no, I come from a basketball family. You know, my dad coached basketball.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle and his son played at Ball State. So I would say I come from a basketball family.
Right. Now, David, you went to Niles High School. Now, you were actually a three-sport standout, playing basketball, football, and baseball. Very good at all three. Now, on the gridiron, you actually caught 20 passes for 607 yards, 10 touchdowns to garner the All-League accolades in 2009. Now, as a basketball player, your senior year, you averaged 18 points a game and was named first-team All-Division after leading the Vikings to their first conference title. Now, I'm sure you had offers. Looking at those numbers, I'm sure you had offers for both basketball and football. What gravitated you towards baseball?
I just think that in basketball, you really got to be a standout. You know, it's only 64 picks. I mean, I wanted to be able to pursue a career after college. And in football, I just felt that I wasn't big enough or fast enough. And I felt that in baseball, I had the brightest future I could pursue a career in. And so I just went with that.
Do you miss, when you look back at high school, do you miss basketball or football at all?
Yeah, I miss football a lot. I miss basketball too. I miss them both. It was a blast. Both sports were a blast.
Now, at your high school, David, how many African American players were on the baseball team?
We had five.
Five on the that's not bad. Then.
No, yeah, we had. It was me. It was our center fielder, a left fielder, our catcher, and our second baseman.
Mm-hmm. Now
we are pretty close too.
Did they go on to play baseball at the next level? What happened with them in their baseball careers?
One went to a junior college. He played at KVCC. The other one went to school at Western. The one went to he was a catcher. He caught at Louisville for 2 years, but now he just go to school. I think he actually be an intern for the White Sox now.
Oh, wow.
And the other one played, maybe it was only four. It was only four.
Gotcha. That's still very impressive compared to other schools I know.
Yeah.
Ladies and gents, we're talking with David Garner. He'll be heading to the MLB to play for the Chicago Cubs. He's a former Michigan State pitcher, selected by the Cubs in the seventh round of the 2013 Major League Baseball first-year player draft. Now, when you look at African-American baseball, to stay on this a little bit, David, do you think these numbers will rise in the future? And what must be done in order for that to happen?
I think they'll rise. I don't think they'll keep declining. They might stay at a steady pace, but I think they'll rise. I just think that people that's in it need to just get other African-Americans involved.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So, yeah. So for you, what do you plan on after hearing these numbers? Were you aware of these numbers at all before you you know thought about the major leagues? Were you aware of these numbers? 8% of African Americans in baseball.
Yeah, I definitely was aware. I mean, I think I was the only black pitcher in the Big Ten.
Wow.
That I can remember, and I remember I did a I was just browsing the internet, mm-hmm. and I think it was in 2000. I can't remember when it was, but it was a time when I was in high school. Wow. Out of the top 25 college Division I baseball teams, it was six black players.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Unbelievable, man. Well, I really sure hope they do rise, man. You know, you being one of the African-American players entering the league now, that really can, you know, you're in that position to really advocate for the game of baseball when it comes to African-American culture. So, David, how is training going out there, man?
It's hot, man. It's out here in Arizona. It's hot.
Right.
I think today it's supposed to get up to 117 degrees.
Oh, my goodness. How are you staying cool, man? You're playing out in 117-degree weather?
Yeah, it's just just a lot of water. They got tablets for you that you take before you go to sleep.
Right.
It's so hot. It's so dry that, like, you sweat, but it don't even come out of your pores. It come out, but it dries so quick you don't even know it.
Wow. Unbelievable. Yeah. So you're out there in Arizona. Yeah. Is this like warm up for the minor league team of the Cubs or what?
Yeah, it's called rookie ball.
Okay.
And then I'm on a throwing program, and then eventually I'll get up to our Short A affiliate, which is in Boise, Idaho. But I've just been throwing, man, throwing, working out, running, stuff like that.
Gotcha. So, David, what can we expect from you in the major leagues?
I'm just going to go out there, and I'm going to try to give it my all. Try to make a good name for Michigan State and Iowa.
That sounds good. Well, there you have it. David Garner. Now former Michigan State pitcher, he was selected by the Chicago Cubs in the 7th round of the 2013 Major League Baseball first-year player draft. He is the highest drafted Spartan pitcher since 2000. David, Current Sports wishes you all the luck in the world as you take that next giant step of your baseball career.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man.
Well, when we return to Current Sports, we'll dive into our Current Sports section of the show. We'll let you know that we'll be taking your calls at 140. Don't hesitate to pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527. Want to hear what's on your mind? Stick around. More Current Sports is next.
Robin Young. Coming up on Here and Now, musician Peter Gabriel describes his piano duet with a primate who learned how to use a computerized keyboard.
So he comes in never having sat at this keyboard before and then does this fantastic sort of triplet improvisation.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now coming up at 2 p.m.
Seven days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat.
To be able to start a farmer's market takes time and energy, people power, and planning.
We change the notes, or we change the phrasing, or we change something for what might happen, and you can't really predict, and that's the beauty of jazz.
We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 WKAR.
Hey, good people, welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Man, Yes, as you see, we have an Independence Day theme going, as tomorrow is July 4th. Man, I love July 4th. Fireworks popping, barbecues. I love it. I cannot wait for it, guys. But all right, this is the current sports section of the show, giving you all of the latest sporting news concerning Mid-Michigan. I am joined by my production assistant, Matt Lutke, is here with me, and intern Mike Corey is with. He is alive, folks. You haven't heard his voice in a while. Mike, you all right, man?
I'm doing good, thanks.
He's recovered. He had a bit of an accident, but he is right here with us today. Glad to have you back. But let's dive right into it. The Detroit Tigers, they topped the Toronto Blue Jays 7-6 yesterday to tie up the four-game series at one game apiece. Now, Detroit actually rallied from a 4-0 deficit. And while watching that game, I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, here we go again. 4-0 to start the game, but they did rally back. Torii Hunter had four singles. Miguel Cabrera had a three-run home run, his 26th, as the Tigers snapped that three-game losing streak, rallying after giving up four runs in the bottom of the first. Although they were down 4-0 in the bottom of the first, people. Doug Fister matched a season high by allowing six runs and seven hits in his six innings. The right-hander has won just once in his past nine starts. He walked one and struck out four. Also, some alarming news, Miguel Cabrera. Of course, he is our gem here in Detroit. In Michigan, I should say. No, we're not in Detroit. I'm having flashbacks of my time in Detroit, guys. Cabrera, he had a lower back injury that fell stiff during batting practice yesterday, then got worse after he made a diving play in the first inning. Now, he took it again while batting in the top of the ninth, and was replaced by Ramon Santiago in the bottom of the inning. How alarming is this injury, guys, when you look at Miguel Cabrera?
Well, backs are always tricky, yeah. Especially with a power hitter. I mean, you're going to need him healthy in every facet, but really the important thing for the Tigers is just kind of survive as long as he's out, because if he's out for, you know, put him on the DL for a little bit,
right.
Just survive until you get to the All-Star break, and, you know, that's really the goal at this point, because, you know, that series with the Angels kind of took all the momentum out of their sales that they had, and now they're just kind of battling back. And hopefully, you know, we don't have the Orioles at all in July, and we don't have the Angels either. So that's two good signs for the Tigers.
Yeah.
But if they're missing Cabrera, obviously, I mean, he is probably the leading MVP candidate this year again. So clearly that's going to be a tough thing to overcome.
He's special. I was just glad yesterday to see the Tigers just get a win. I mean, seriously, even though it was a run win over the Blue Jays, it's a win nonetheless, and they need something like that, too, just to get their confidence back. Because looking at this whole losing streak that they have been on prior to yesterday's game, I mean, energy-wise, confidence-wise, they just seemed out of it, guys. You know? And when you look at that game yesterday and the way they started off, 4-0, you can't start games like that. I don't care. I mean, they got lucky and they got hot at the right moments in that game yesterday, but at the same time, you got to come out with a certain energy and a certain awareness, especially if you've been losing it like the Tigers have been.
Yeah, especially with this like little injury scare. You know, the last thing you need is for this to happen, because, you know, he's the only one that was really producing during this losing streak. And right. If you lose him, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. So they need to really be careful in these next like week and a half or 2 weeks before the All-Star break.
Very, very true. And Leland was quoted yesterday after the game saying he's not ready to declare Cabrera ready to go just yet. he said no rest tomorrow. He hopes that he'll be ready, though. He's going to play it by ear. So now, as far as the Blue Jays go, for the second straight start, Toronto's Chi Meng Wang, he failed to make it out of the second inning. He allowed base hits in the first four batters and was replaced after Victor Martinez singled in the seventh. And you know, he didn't see action after that. So also want to note that Anibal Sanchez, Detroit's right-handed pitcher who has been out, he is expected to come off the disabled list Saturday and start at Cleveland. Thank goodness Sanchez has been out since June 16th with that sore right shoulder. And also want to note that Toronto third baseman Brett Lowry, he has this left ankle problem. He was supposed to play a rehab game with the with Class A in Dunedin on Tuesday, but it was rained out. Instead, Lowry will play for the Lansing Lugnuts on Thursday and Friday. So guys who are going to the Lugnuts games these next few days, you get to see a major leaguer in Brett Lowry. That should be exciting, right? And I think, Matt, I mean, Mike, you're going,
I might be possibly going to the game tomorrow.
Nice. Interesting. So as far as the Lugnuts go, let's move on to the Lugnuts now. The Lansing Lugnuts lost their fifth straight game yesterday to the Lake County Captain. 6-2 was the final of that one. My goodness. I mean, the Luggies right now in the second half of the season, they're just 2-10 for the second half and a really horrid start. They are currently in last place of the Midwest League Eastern Division. But on the bright side, if you look at, you know, it could be worse. If you look at the Burlington Bees in the Midwest League Western Division, they're actually on a 10-game losing streak. But so, this is bad, though, for the Luggies, guys.
It's
really,
no
really
fun.
Bad.
It's no fun. No. If you're a minor league baseball team and you can't win. Like, it's, I understand that, you know, people go to the games for different reasons, obviously, because, you know, the atmosphere at a minor league game is obviously different, more intimate, but, you know, nobody likes to see their team lose five in a row. But, yeah, apparently it could be worse.
Especially with the most recent loss and how they lost, if you're about to touch on that.
Yeah, I believe the first game of this series with Lake County, I believe it was against Lake County, but, I mean, they thought they had the game won, but I forget what batter it was, but it was a walk-off hit. Mm-hmm. And the runner did not touch the bases. Mm. And so they're celebrating. The Lugnuts crowd the field. They're celebrating. And they actually had to call everyone back and say, hey, you didn't touch the bases. And they had to redo everything. And they end up losing that game.
Yeah, that's 10th inning.
That's why they're in the minors, guys.
Yeah.
That's why they're in the minors. I mean.
Very true. I got to get Jesse. Jesse is the voice of the Lugnuts. I got to get him in there to talk about this. This is incredible. If you look at last season, though, with the Lugnuts, they had a solid season. The pitching. Pitching it was really the shining light last season. That's something they are tremendously lacking this season. So, they lose their fifth straight. Game two of the four-game home and home series is set for a 7 p.m. first pitch tonight at Classic Park. The Lugnuts will give the ball to 18-year-old right-hander Roberto Osuna. He's 3-4 with a 4.20 ERA to oppose Captain's right-hander Jake Cisco. Cisco, I mean, it reminds me of that singer back in the day. You know, remember Cisco? He used to dye his hair.
Dye his hair silver?
Hilarious.
Yeah, the dragon.
Yeah,
it's a great look.
The dragon, right. Anyway, Jake Cisco, he's 4-6 with a 3.55 ERA. All right, Bailey, just listen to this, guys.
A strike away and out away is Homer Bailey. Ground ball to third. Frazier gloves. Throw to first, and Homer Bailey, for the second time in his Major League career, has tossed a no-hitter.
Yes, that was Homer Bailey. He threw his second no-hitter in 10 months, leading the Cincinnati Reds infield celebration with arms raised, a 3-0 victory over the San Francisco Giants, the defending World Series champion San Francisco Giants. Unbelievable, guys. Two no-hitters in 10 months?
It's crazy. He was the last pitcher to throw a no-hitter last year, and now the first one this year.
That's special, man. Now, Bailey became the third Reds pitcher with more than one no-hitter, joining Jim Maloney and Johnny Vandermeer. Still the only big leaguer to toss two in a row. Bailey beat the Pirates 1-0 in Pittsburgh last September 28th and got another 17 starts later, of course. And 102 pitches, that's how many it took him last night to do it. One walk, 9 strikeouts. And the defending World Series champions, they only had one moment in which they thought they might get a hit. Bailey threw the last of the major 7 no-hitters last season and now the first of 2013. The last pitcher to throw one no-hitter and then another before anyone else in the majors accomplished defeat was the great Nolan Ryan. According to stats, baseball's career strikeout king, Nolan Ryan, did it for the California Angels on September 28th, 1974 against Minnesota and June 1st, 1975 versus Baltimore. Nolan Ryan, interesting, because Nolan Ryan is actually Homer's childhood idol, guys, and he wears number 34 just like Ryan, and is also from Texas, the same team Ryan played for, of course, the Texas Rangers. Now, Justin Verlander, Roy Halladay and Mark he's the only active pitchers in a pair of no-hitters. Halladay, of course, threw one of his in the postseason against the Reds in 2010. This kid is special, guys.
Hey, he's always been kind of pegged as being something special. He was the 7th pick in 2004. He was like their top prospect in the late 2000s, and it's nice to see a guy you know, with a bunch of hype, live up to it and maybe exceed it, because he's a stud.
And be considered in, like, any category with Nolan Ryan's got to be a great honor upon him, especially if he considers him, like, his idol.
Yeah, without a doubt. That just adds to this incredible story. So congrats to Homer Bailey. It's always special seeing a no-hitter in baseball, one of the greatest accomplishments that you can accomplish in the world of sports. All right, A-Rod, Alex Rodriguez, for the Yankees. He played three innings at third base for the Class A Charleston River Dogs Tuesday, going 0-for-2 at the plate with one strikeout. Rodriguez has not played a game since last year's postseason, recovering from that January hip injury. He also had surgery on that hip. Now, Rodriguez says he wants to erase all of the painful memories of last year's finish when he just completely bombed in the postseason, guys. He took a lot of the blame for the loss to the Detroit Tigers as they swept the Yankees in the AL Championship Series. And he says, quote, "Let's be honest. The way that the year has ended last year was pretty bloody. We got swept. I got benched. I got pinch hit for. I got nobody to blame but myself because I stunk up the house. That's for sure." So at least he admits it, guys.
Right, yeah. Well, that's the first time he's admitted something
the first
he's done.
Time. Yeah. Very true. Now, Rodriguez, if you look at, you know, his situation right now, it hasn't been very pretty with the Yankees. It got uglier in the offseason when his name, of course, surfaced in Major League Baseball's drug investigations with the whole Biogenesis thing. And also, you know, right now he also got, you know, he tweeted that, you know, he's ready to come back with the Yankees. And, of course, his manager gets upset that he tweeted that. So he's got a rocky stint with the Yankees right now. Now, according to the Associated Press, A-Rod said he will need all 20 games. Now, that's the maximum allowed during a continual rehab assignment. So he's going to take all 20 games. That's what he says before returning to the Yankees lineup. Do you guys think he's going to be efficient
when he comes back? Absolutely not.
I don't think he is.
He wasn't really efficient that much before.
Yeah, I mean, what is he, 38 right now? He's not getting younger.
When did that happen?
Yeah,
he's 38?
30.
My goodness.
Eight. I can't believe when I heard that, I'm like, hold on, A-Rod is 38?
Yeah, and
he's
unless...
He's still owed another $100 million by the Yankees.
Yeah.
At this age.
Yeah, he is.
And I feel like if he does, you know, if he is efficient, you know, a few months from now, his name's going to pop up in another scandal with a different, company that no one's ever heard of. And
exactly.
It's just going to be this all over again.
And I believe he's already admitted that he used PEDs in the past.
Right.
He has came out and admitted
around,
that.
Like 2003, I think.
Right. So, A-Rod.
Right.
quote unquote. A-Rod. That's all I can say with him. Let's move on. All right, Wimbledon update. Now, the only American left on the women's side, Sloane Stephens, she was beaten by Marion Bartoli yesterday. So there are no Americans left on the women's side of Wimbledon. Now, as far as the men go, top seed Novak Djokovic, he reached the semifinals at Wimbledon for the fourth year in a row with a comfortable defeat of Czech Republic's Tomáš Berdych. Am I saying that right?
Your guess is as good as mine.
All right, your guys. Okay, yeah. Djokovic, who has yet to drop a set in the tournament, he won 7-6, 7-5, 6-4, 6-3 were the finals in those sets. And right now, Andy Murray is currently playing Fernando Verdasco, and I have a score update for you guys. Murray actually dropped the first two sets, 6-4, 6-3. In the third set, he won it 6-1. The fourth set he won, 6-4. Guys, this is in a fifth set battle.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a battle right now, right, guys?
And Alex must be glued to his laptop
he has
in
to,
class right now.
Because for those of you listening, as we do our Pick'em Mondays each and every week and at the end of the month, the loser has to do karaoke with a song chosen by the winner of that month. And right now, Alex is at the very bottom. But if Andy Murray wins the entire Wimbledon, he will be tied with Mike, and we'll be hearing a duet from both of them. So I'm actually pulling
for
Andy
if he does win, I'm at least going to be pulling for Ebony and Ivory.
Well, yeah, that'd be fun. I'm looking for some Casey and JoJo stuff from. I'm sure Matt has some great songs up his sleeve for you guys if that happens. But right now, it's in a fifth set. This is a battle. Tied two sets. This is deciding fifth set. Andy Murray and Verdasco, unbelievable. Well, I keep you updated as the show goes on with this one, because that's truly exciting stuff. So, all right, Rudy Gay possibly going to the Pistons. All right, well, Josh Smith and Andre Iguodala, they aren't the only small forwards that the Pistons are looking for. ESPN.com says the Pistons are offering Rodney Stuckey and Charlie Villanueva both expiring contracts to the Toronto Raptors for forward Rudy Gay. Now, the Raptors are trying to clear their books following the 2013-14 season. And trading Gay, who has 2 years left on his five-year, $82.3 million contract, could be a part of that plan. Now, the Raptors are already, they traded big man and former number one pick, Andrea Bargnani, to the New York Knicks. And Gay, who's 26 years old, he averaged 18.6 rebounds, 2 assists last season. And he was traded to Toronto from the Grizzlies near midseason. Is this a good guy, good move for the Pistons in getting Rudy Gay? What do you guys think?
I think it is. I like how I've seen the Pistons be really aggressive right now in free agency. It's not something we've really seen them do all that well
finally,
in the past.
Right?
Yeah, I've seen them go after, you know, Rudy and then Andre Iguodala and then
Josh Smith as well.
Yeah. It's nice to see them. I think it'd be a smart move because really, who else do you have on your team right now?
Yeah.
See, I disagree. I feel like this is the first year that Charlie Villanueva and Rodney Stuckey are actually valuable because they are expiring contracts and they are trade chips. But getting Rudy Gay, I mean, his salary, $19 million next year.
Yeah.
We're basically in the same boat we are having Villanueva and Stuckey this year.
Right.
So like, you take no money off the books for an additional year, and you get a player who's more or less, I mean, he's good, but he's not great. You know, he's not going to be a star. I mean, he shoots 32% from three-point range. The Memphis Grizzlies traded him at the deadline, didn't miss a beat. You know, they improved offensively, and he was supposed to be their best offensive player. It didn't really happen. I mean, yeah, they lost to the Spurs, and they got blown off the court, but it's not like Rudy Gay would have been hitting threes, and that's what they really needed. So I don't know, you know, as far as the fit Rudy Gay would work with the Pistons, and certainly salary-wise, he's overpaid. Mm-hmm. It's a bad contract.
Right, yeah. When you look at it, if they do make this move, I personally, as a Pistons fan, will be glad that Rodney Stuckey is leaving the team.
Me too.
If it happens, because Rodney Stuckey, to me, he's just a headache left and right. But like you said, when you look at Gay, you never know really what you're getting from Gay because he's so inconsistent. He's another one of those inconsistent players. And I think right now the Pistons have enough inconsistent players, to be honest with you. And, you know, when you look at this move, though, financially it does not – do anything that benefits the Pistons, to tell you the truth.
Right.
But, yeah, you never know. The Pistons, I'm just happy that, like Mike said, they're being aggressive. And this is the first time I've really seen the Pistons be aggressive in the free agency period in a long, long time. So we'll see what happens, though. The Pistons also talked with Boston Celtics guard Rajon Rondo, who is signed through 2015 amid his five-year contract for $55 million with the Celtics. Man, we're running out of time, though, but I just also want to note that Tim Tebow, he tried to break up a fight involving University of Florida alum Aaron Hernandez. Aaron Hernandez, of course, is in jail with this whole thing with, you know, murdering Odin Lloyd. Tim Tebow tried to break up a fight in 2007. This is really just now surfacing. The Wall Street Journal reported Tuesday that Tim Tebow was a witness to an alleged bar fight with Hernandez a few months after enrolling at Florida in 2007. So reports say that Hernandez was 17 at the time, had two alcoholic drinks.
What's he doing in a bar?
Exactly. You're 17 years old. Aaron. All right. This guy is something else, man, I tell you. But anyway, he finished the drinks, refused to pay for them when he was presented the bill. Hernandez entered a verbal altercation with the man who brought him the bill, and Hernandez was asked to leave the restaurant and eventually was escorted out by, you know, that individual. Hernandez told police that they stepped outside. The guy got in his face. He yelled at him. And the guy walked away. Hernandez punched him in the side of the head. And Hernandez admits that he does that, that he did that.
If Tim Tebow can't stop you, who can?
I'm telling you, man.
You need, like, Chuck Norris in that bar to break that thing up. This is terrible.
It just gets worse and worse for Aaron Hernandez. Wow. All right, ladies and gents, we have to move on to our last segment of Current Sports. Hit me up on Facebook.com/CurrentSports. Even tweet me a question at AlMartinWKR. I want to hear from you. Stick around. More Current Sports is next.
Coast to coast. I'm Peggy Olson, the new girl.
That's Elizabeth Moss as Peggy Olson and John Hamm as Don Draper in their first scene together on Mad Men. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Elizabeth Moss about how Peggy has changed over the past 6 seasons. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock.
You count on All Things Considered for many reasons. The biggest stories of the day, from around the world to your own backyard. The thoughtful commentaries, the insightful features, or all of the above. All Things Considered has been your trusted source for news every afternoon. I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered, and glad to be a part of this show. I'll see you at 4 this afternoon.
All right, it is Wednesday, so as always, gotta love this segment, Barbershop Wednesdays. I'm joined by my production assistants, Alex Sharg and Matt Lutke, as we have a very interesting topic to bring to you all. Now, if you have been following the NFL since the Super Bowl, particularly after the season has ended, did you know that 28 players have been arrested since Super Bowl Sunday? That is mind-boggling, guys. So on today's Barbershop Wednesday, and the reason why we call this Barbershop Wednesday is because when you go into barbershop, there's always a sports debate going on, and we are debating whether or not NFL teams should be fined or punished due to the behavior of their athletes being arrested. So what do you guys want? What do you guys think on it?
First, I want to ask you, yeah, as a former high school and college-earning scholarship basketball player, do you expect teams to train athletes on behavior with classes? Should teams have that responsibility, leaving outside the fines for a second, but should they have that responsibility as that father figure for some of these athletes?
Well, the thing is, what I think when you look at this discussion about athletes and, you know, getting arrested due to their behavior away from the field, and you look at and you talk about the teams, you look at the teams in this regard, I really look at the scouts, to tell you the truth. And I think it's really a question right now of you know, I think this question is valid when you talk about fining or punishing teams in this regard, is because the scouts go out and they see these players. Of course, they see the talent that these guys have on the field, unbelievable talent. But you also, you can't just judge a player based on their performance on the field. You have to look at everything, and you have to really look at the character of these players that are brought into the league. A lot of them are you know, they have these rocky backgrounds, but a lot of it goes, you know, gets pushed aside because they see what these guys can do on the field, and they kind of disregard it. And that's the kind of the sacrifice they make, bringing in a player who's unbelievable on the field, mm-hmm, but his character is in question. And there needs to be more of a light on character when you talk about these players. That job is not being done by these scouts.
So. Right. And Alex, like you said, in a college or high school setting, absolutely they should be trying to help mentor these kids
without
off the field. And, you know, they say that college coaches, like, they mold men. They are molders of men. They create, you know, they prepare these guys for the next level. But when you get to the pros, you know, you are a professional football player. I mean, the first word, that you are a professional, and you should act like
right.
one everywhere, in every facet of it. And, you know, they have these symposiums to teach rookies about what to do and what not to do. I mean, Pac-Man Jones is speaking there again. Nice example of what not to do.
Right.
But, you know, you look at, the scouting, like Al said, you know, guys like Darko Milicic in basketball, you know, mm-hmm. Joe Dumars said on the court he was perfect, but we didn't really know what we were getting with his personality.
Right.
And it's like, how can you not know that? It's the number two pick. You're going to give this guy millions and millions of dollars. You know, it is the organization's responsibility to kind of figure out what they're getting, what they're putting their money into, and if you know, you keep taking chances on these guys, sooner or later you're going to get burned. We see guys fall in the draft all the time. Aaron Hernandez was one of them. He was projected first rounder, fell to the fourth round, and the Patriots said, all right, we'll bite. I mean, they do that with everybody. Like Ryan Mallett. The Patriots do it with a lot of guys, and finally it really came back to bite him in pretty much the biggest way it possibly could with this Hernandez fiasco. But, you know, the teams invest so much in them. If they do, you know, get into trouble with the law, chances are good they're going to get suspended anyway. So I feel like that is enough. I don't know if it's enough of a punishment, but it at least is something as far as punishment goes.
It's something.
Sure. Now, and it's a great point you brought up the law, because I look at this in two ways. There are fines that have to do with PEDs, drugs, and you could even, you know, have drugs that are, you know, marijuana or alcohol or anything like that that grants that suspension. Now I look at the other fines that deal with saying the wrong things, talking about the NFL in a negative light, violating team rules. So there are two categories for me that have to do with some of these fines and violations. Now, should teams be responsible for the law side of fines? And then should teams be responsible for team rules and the NFL image? I think when it comes to a team in NFL, yes, I think they should be. When it comes to the law, I think they should, but I don't think you can, because yes, scouts and teams should be molding these players, but do they have any say on what players do with their lives outside of football? Are they in their homes, their personal lives around the clock? Let's look at what we do, guys.
Wait, well, I got to pose this question. So you do think there should be some type of punishment for the player who goes out there and does something stupid and gets arrested?
I think there should, but personally, I don't think there will be. But I think there should, yes.
What do you
yes.
think should be done, though? That's the question, really. How should they be punished?
Let's take a movie, for example, since we were so into movies today on our yesterday in our top five.
Right.
But let's look at movies for a second. Let's take a great Glory Road or Hoosiers. When one player misses a free throw, you all run the lap. Let's look at Miracle. If one of you messes up, all mess up. It's your team. If you take away the team responsibility and don't find players and don't find overall teams for your actions, then where does morale and makeup go with this league? And that's my argument.
And Alex, right. I think it starts even earlier than the pros. I mean, this it's a little old of a story. Urban Meyer, 30 arrests in his 6 years at Florida. And really, what happened to Florida? Nothing. No accountability at all. So these guys go to college, you know, players like Aaron Hernandez. Again, he's coming up all the time. But, you know, they go, they see these, you know, guys getting in trouble, slaps on the wrist. There's no real accountability on any level of what that program was doing. You know, all they did was win national championships, and that's all anybody cares about. Urban Meyer moves on. Now he's the coach at Ohio State, and he's, you know, bringing in more big bucks. And Florida, you know, while they've fallen off a little bit, they're still humming along. They're still a big-time program.
Yeah.
So these guys come up in the system. They see that you can pretty much get away with whatever you want as you are winning.
Right.
And that's where that moral decay, I think, is coming from. I think it starts even before pro sports. It's just the business of sports in general.
Yeah, without a doubt. And like I said, when you look at college football or college sports in general, I mean – you know, there's been this whole rumor that's gone on for years and years that college athletes kind of get a pass on everything when it comes to school, when it comes to them getting in trouble, just because, you know, these teams want their players out there. They spend all this time recruiting, and they want the best talent out there no matter what they do. And that's the kind of the stigma that goes around that whole recruiting process and players in college. And that sets them up for failure when they get to the league, because they feel as though, like Matt said, you can get away with anything once you get to the NFL. And that's really the problem right now. And I really do think that I definitely think if this continues, because this is an alarming number, we're talking about 28 players.
Yeah.
28 players getting arrested since Super Bowl Sunday in NFL. That's an alarming number, and really something needs to be done as far as the teams go, I think. Because I go back to the scouts. I mean, these individuals who are picking up these athletes, they know the kind of character these guys are. I mean, they go out, they recruit them, they spend days with them, they do background checks, they do all of that. They take IQ tests, they do all of that stuff.
Yeah, like, if they're hinting about your sexual orientation, asking guys coming to the NFL if they have a girlfriend, if they like girls, why aren't they finding these other red flags?
Exactly.
Or why are they not paying attention to them?
Exactly. They're simply ignoring them because they don't want that player sitting out on Sunday, you know, when game time comes.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, the play on the field is becoming more important than the character of the individual. And anytime that crosses the line and those things become gray, there's a problem with that. And I do think something needs to be done.
Two things. Let's localize what you just said, Al, for a second. 28 players, very alarming. Something needs to be done. Let's go back last year before this year's Super Bowl.
Yeah.
When we had countless number of Detroit Lions players.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
In trouble. And then the bad boy image came back from Fairley to Titus. It was just preposterous.
Yeah.
Now we have this year. And the funny thing was last year, guys, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe a lot of teams, a lot of fans, a lot of NFL coaches and players were kind of making a mockery saying, look at these Lion guys. You don't see any other team with nine players in trouble. But now let's go back to this year. Everyone's following suit. Now, does that mean that there needs to be something done? Does that mean that maybe they're catching on? Maybe the rest of the league is catching on to what the Lions have been doing? Do they see what the Lions have gotten away with temporarily, and then some of the other players figure they can do the same?
But when you talk about this, I mean, this is not some under-the-rug crime here. I mean, if you look at John Leftwich, who was arrested this past weekend with the Indianapolis Colts, I mean, this guy was arrested during a traffic stop. Police found a semi-automatic pistol in the car in which he was riding. They were riding the Camaro. They stop at a red light. The police come and flag him. They pull off. One of his friends is in the back seat standing up. I mean, this is just stupid. This is stupidity we're talking about here. And this is not, you know, anything that – this is something that anybody out there will be arrested for if they were doing the same thing. So when you look at these crimes, these are things that – they're just disobeying the law and getting arrested. And that's a problem in itself because it goes back to the C-word, character. These NFL players, I don't know what – I mean, somebody has to be held accountable here. The player who does the crime has to be held accountable. But if anytime you got a number as high as 28, and that's just February.
Right.
We're in July right now. Of course, the NFL season is right around the corner. We've got a few months. But, I mean, since Super Bowl Sunday, 28 player, 28. That's too alarming, and something more needs to be done.
Yeah, and if teams were looking at the Lions, they should have looked at their record last year and how all this off-the-field garbage kind of bled into their on-field performance because they were terrible. And that's what people kind of pointed to. Like, look at the Lions. There's no structure. There's no, you know, accountability. Again, they just weren't a focused team. And it kind of stems from, I hate to bring Jim Schwartz into this, but like that attitude of, you know, we are going to be tougher than you. I mean, practically fighting Jim Harbaugh after the post-game handshake, that kind of helped that image. And then you get the off-the-field trouble with it. And it's like, if you're teaching these guys who are coming into the league to just be, you know, be killers, be, you know, so aggressive, be ultra-aggressive, maybe that does carry over into their personal lives. Who knows? It seemed like it kind of did because everyone was getting arrested.
Everyone
was making terrible choices. So, you know, maybe you don't need a hothead for a coach. Maybe you need a more reserved guy. But again, that sounds like something that you would say at the college level where guys, you know, are learning to be grown men instead of when they're in the pros when they should already have become a grown man.
Like, right. And that's one of the, you know, it brings me to a point I want to pose to you guys, a question I want to pose to you guys. Why is this just happening? Of course, it happens in other sports. With basketball, you know, you get basketball players who just go out there and do stupid things. You get it a little bit in every sport. You do get a little bit in every sport. But it's more alarming when you 28 again. I keep going at the number, 28. It's more alarming when it comes to the game of football, the NFL. Why do you guys think the NFL was so prone to this whole, you know, getting arrested, you know, off the field crap in the offseason?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. But one thing that I could tell you is there is some little bit of policy. I did a little research. There is some policy with teams paying fines, with suspensions and whatnot, that can happen. In 2012, I believe it was the Seattle Seahawks, they were estimated to pay $60,000 in suspensions that happened for two of their players related to the performing enhancing drugs policy.
Right.
Now, that's what I came back to my argument about. There's the performing enhancing drug side, then there's the team rules, and there's the DUIs, the things you do on your personal life. You don't see fines for your personal things, but you do see fines for the performing enhancing drugs. And the policy that was created in 2008 takes 25% into that initial amount as a fine. So the total amount from all the Seahawks players that were in trouble years ago, that amounted to about $60,000. Now, it says here in this article written by Pro Football Talk on NBC Sports that they did not reveal how much was actually fined to the Seahawks, because that is not in the policy of the NFL to reveal the information about players.
Mm-hmm.
But that does tell you, Al, and trust me, you know, I don't think any of us know here why it's so more prone to football, but it does say that the money does matter. Even if it is specifically one sport, I think it matters.
Right. Yeah. I can definitely see that argument as well. And, you know, some of the interesting that I got to bring up, Minnesota governor, this is back last year, in August of last year, actually. I don't know if you guys remember this, but the Minnesota governor said that football players, quote, they get arrested because they're basically soldiers returning from war. And that kind of brings up your point, Matt, when you talk about this whole football players are looked at, you know, to be this mean, aggressive, go out there and knock somebody's head off type of guy.
Right.
And in the offseason, all of that energy that they just, you know, exhausted throughout the entire NFL season, where does it go? And he feels as though, I guess, that, you know, it goes out into society, which leads to all of these arrests. Interesting comment from the Minnesota governor. But at the same time, I mean, let's be real here. These are individuals. They play football. Yes, I know that. At the same time, they've been living all of their life in regular society as normal human beings. They know the law. They know what you can't do and what you can do. And they go out here and they do what you can't do, to be honest with you. And to put it plain and simple. And it's very frustrating for the game of football to see this, because, I mean, you talk about a lot of high prolific athletes have. I mean, Pac-Man Jones, at the end of the day, I think he's a solid player when he's out there at the top of his game.
Right.
And I could go on and on. Guys like Chad Johnson, at one point I thought he was one of the top receivers in the game, and then he came with his problems. But, you know, these guys are great athletes, but at the same time, they just make stupid decisions. And I think maybe something needs to be done where the NFL needs to mentor these guys a little bit more as rookies coming into the game. I don't know. But it's certainly disturbing, to say the least.
How much time do you think it will take, Al, for this mentoring for these players?
Oh, man. To tell you the truth, and let's be real here, if you were to bring a rookie in and have him sit down and listen to some guy say, oh, you can't do this and that, that's not going to do anything, guys. Let's be honest here. They're just sitting in a classroom. You're preaching to the choir. They know what they can and can't do.
So are you saying specifically lectures won't work?
No, lectures are not going to work. They probably fall asleep. They fall asleep during, and I heard a report about this, you know, when NFL players come into the league, and we talked about this with the whole broke segment, they are taught how to finance how to manage their money. And I heard a report the other day, half of them are sleeping during the lecture.
Yeah, the more they talk, the less the players are going to listen.
Right,
and
exactly.
It's ridiculous.
So it's to the point where...
So what other ways can they do it?
I'm lost. I really have no idea, guys. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see where this goes from here. But 28 players since Super Bowl Sunday.
Now, you've heard more talk and more chatter about this topic from other sources, I believe.
Yeah. I mean,
what were some of the arguments posed on there?
It came up. I last weekend driving around had on XM radio, and they had this discussion because the news had just broke about, you know, Indianapolis Colts safety Leftwich getting arrested the night before, and they were talking about it, and they were pretty, you know, upset about the whole thing because 28 players, that he was the 28th player to be arrested since Super Bowl Sunday. And they were bringing up different things, and they kind of echo what I said in the beginning of this argument, that, you know, these scouts who are going out there looking at these players, they have to look more than just, and this is in any sport, you have to look more than just what they're doing on that court, on that field, and you have to look at their personalities, you have to look at their character, how they carry themselves, because, to be honest, I think a lot of these scouts, you know, they may look at a phenom and be like, okay, he's unbelievable on the field. And they may see these, you know, these red flags in other areas, but don't address them because they want that player on their team performing to a high level. And that kind of gets shoved under the rug.
Right. Like, I mean, you can have a laundry list of off-the-field problems, but you run a 4-4 at the combine, we're going to take you with a second-round pick. Like,
right.
That's basically the mentality. And
right.
That's kind of where the change needs to start.
Exactly, guys. All right, Barbershop Wednesdays. Boy, it's always fun, guys. Well, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Al Martin. You've been listening to Current Sports on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Be easy, people, and have a safe 4th of July. See?